This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
Today, we are talking about Prosecco.
Yes, and this episode was suggested by us during the champagne episode.
That's right, and we almost forgot to do it, but then we remembered.
You remember.
I remembered, because I was like, you know what, let's see this through. Like, I genuinely have wondered in the week since you and I recorded the champagne episode.
Right.
I think it's been 2 weeks for our listeners.
Okay, yeah.
Something like that. Anyway, I've genuinely wondered,
but they're all still thinking about it.
Yeah, they absolutely are. Like, is there such a thing as like a high-end Prosecco? Is Prosecco made the same way as champagne? All of these burning questions.
Yeah, I think we'll answer some of those questions. Does this mean, like, 2 weeks from now we're going to do a cava episode?
No.
And then we're going to do a sect episode?
Didn't we establish that cava is cava generally made using the
Charmat
Champenoise?
No, the other one, the Charmat process, which we'll talk about a lot on this
episode.
Whoa,
I did not hear you use that word in our champagne episode.
Champagne can't be made using the Charmat process. So,
Wait a minute. So cava is made using this other method, is Prosecco?
So I think this is not true of all cavas. So cava is a name for, like, a general, it is the generic name for sparkling Spanish wine.
Like Cremant
Prosecco
in
and
French.
Champagne. Yes, exactly. Prosecco and champagne are much more specific terms than
Got
that.
It. Ah, okay. All right. Oh my God. I'm already, there's so much learning happening.
Okay. But before we even get to Prosecco, I need to talk to you about a weird McDonald's commercial that I heard this morning.
Okay. Please do.
So I was listening to a podcast and I heard a McDonald's commercial advertising their new, like, sharing, friendship is sharing menu. So it's like a two for one type of thing.
Okay.
And the commercial went something like this. I'm not going to get the phrasing exactly right, but it was like two people talking, two friends. And the first one said, I got to get in on some of your chicken McNuggets. And the other one replied, and I got to have some of your quarter pounder with cheese. Would you agree with me that one of these sentences makes perfect sense and the other one is fucking insane?
Wait a minute. Hold on. Okay. Say them again.
All right. I got to get in on some of your chicken McNuggets, and I've got to have some of your quarter pounder with cheese.
I'm not seeing the problem here.
If you were getting a hamburger and I said, can I have some of your hamburger? You would say, no, what planet did you just arrive from, right?
I have gone to, like, plenty of restaurants where I'm like, oh, I really want the burger, but I also want this thing. And so, like, my spouse and I will get those two things and we'll cut the burger in half and, like, share
the
things.
How would you cut a burger in half at McDonald's? Did you bring a switchblade to McDonald's?
Have you ever given a friend a bite of your food? Just a bite? Just passed the burger and been like, here, have a bite?
Yes, I have. But if my friend, like, prospectively said, and can I, and, like, you know, I can I have a couple of bites of that burger you're about to order, I'd be like, I need new friends.
Really? Oh my god! I feel like I've been put on notice. Wow!
This is exactly what I thought.
This is fascinating.
This is great because, like, I told Lori, wife of the show, Lori, about this commercial this morning. She completely agreed with me, and I said I've got to talk about this with Molly, and she said that's a dangerous game because you and Molly might have to break up after this.
Okay, so I'm fascinated by this. So yesterday we recorded a bonus episode for our paying subscribers.
Yes.
And in that bonus episode, we watched Fast X, the 10th Fast and Furious movie.
Yes, which is now your favorite movie.
Anyway, I was just baffled during the entire movie and during the taping of the episode by Matthew and Abby's like relationship to this movie, by like what you are able to see in it. It's like your brains work differently to process the information that is the movie. Okay. And I feel that we're having another moment like that now and talking about McDonald's quarter pounders with cheese. Like we just see this fundamentally differently. I think are we going to have to break up? Do we have fundamental differences?
Irreconcilable differences?
Oh, I was broken up with fundamental differences.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize things were getting so real.
No, that was like 1999. It was a grad student I was dating named Derek, the one who always brought his friend Tom on our dates.
I remember this. Yeah. Can't believe that didn't work out.
I know, right? It was because we had fundamental differences.
Yeah. No, listeners, get on the Reddit, everythingspilledmilk. Reddit.com and let's have a conversation about like this burger sharing thing. It's not that I'm opposed to the very idea of sharing a burger. It's the idea of someone saying, I got to get in on some of your burger. Chicken nuggets are just divisible in a way that a burger isn't.
No, I understand this. Okay, I understand this. Here's a question.
Yeah.
If you and Lori went to McDonald's and you're standing there in line and you're like, I'm going to get the quarter pounder with cheese. And Lori's like, I want chicken nuggets, but I got to get in on your quarter pounder with cheese.
I would know that she was a pod person.
Well, would you say that? I mean, do you think that that's a come on?
Oh, like I got to get in on that.
On your quarter pounder with cheese.
Yeah, that's. Sure. Now that you mention it, you're right. That is what she's always called my junk.
Speaking of which, wait, Matthew, we can cut this part out, but
no.
There was one thing that I realized last night I forgot to point out about Fast and Furious.
Okay, good. This is a sneak preview. Everyone's going to want to subscribe and get the bonus episode after this.
It was when the villain, whose name is Ames, not to be confused with my son.
But like he was like a sub-villain.
Yeah, okay. When Ames is like fighting some guys and says, I've got 16 carats of uncut diamonds in my jockstrap.
Right.
And I was like,
what?
I was like literally processing that for like two full minutes afterward.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because I was equally confused. Okay, we're back.
I was like, okay, uncut. So is he saying he's uncircumcised? And he's telling this to guys he's like beating down? Like,
what does the 16 refer to?
Well, is it like, well, are they large? They're large. Six, like 2 8 carat, like his balls are the size of 8 carat diamonds.
Okay, and all right.
And they're
so,
but they're uncut. Right, so before, like, are they like before still we fight, encased
I need
in rock?
To, I need to let you know, like I have like very large, like enlarged, hardened testicles, and I'm uncircumcised. Now we can fight.
And I'm wearing a jock strap.
So yeah, maybe like I'm wearing a cup, like because the whole area is very sensitive.
I know. I really felt that way about it. I was like,
that was wild.
I truly felt like there was like sand in the gears of my brain as I was trying to move past that joke. Like, what does it mean? What am I supposed to feel for this guy? Am I supposed to feel sympathy for him?
Maybe. I almost feel like the actor was like, okay, so the main villain is like a psychopath who says like wild things all the time. Like, give me just one thing to say that's going to confuse everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm glad. I think we recovered from the burger incident, and now we're totally back on board.
Yeah, we're friends
as
again.
Friends. Okay, great.
Hey, so memory lane. I've got no Prosecco memory lane.
No, I just like kind of remember like everyone seemed to start drinking it around 2009 or so. And I wrote that before doing the research, and it was remarkably correct.
Now you're just showing off.
I am.
Okay. You know, let's just...
I've got like up here, like in the whole brain area, I got like 16 uncut diamonds.
16. They're just rattling around.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. What does a diamond look like before it's cut? Does it just look like a testicle?
Smaller, unless you're very lucky. Okay. Yeah, I think it just looks kind of like a lump. Like a lumpy rock.
Like a geode, but inside is a diamond?
No, I think it's more like, I don't know. Like, I was going to say, but like, what do I actually know about diamonds?
Hey, if we have any gemologists in the listener room.
Or even just gem enthusiasts.
Yeah. Hey, let us know. What do uncut diamonds look like? Like, does this metaphor
ask the listeners work? This isn't like an opinion.
Well, no, but
okay, great.
I'm not going to look it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, listeners, send us pictures of your uncut diamonds.
Don't.
All right. Yeah. So let's talk about Prosecco, finally, shall
we? Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, where does the word Prosecco come from? Is it like champagne? Is it the name of a place?
Yes. Did you know this?
No.
I had no idea until I started researching for this episode. I imagined that the name, like, it's a really good name for a fizzy wine. And so I imagined, like, it meant, like, you know, like fresh wine or something. And it is a place in, like, northeastern Italy.
Okay. Huh. Wow. All right.
It's a tiny town in Friuli Venezia Giulia near the border of Italy and Slovenia.
I'd like to go on vacation.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Right? And the population is mostly Slovenian, and the name comes from the word prosek in Slovenian, which means path cut through the woods or cross section.
Ah, path cut through the woods. I love that.
Let's turn to Wikipedia.
Great.
Which says, quote, the first known mention of the name Prosecco is attributed to the Englishman Fynes Morrison, which is spelled Fynes Morrison, which is a very good name, who used the spelling Prosecco, Prosecco. Morrison, visiting the north of Italy in 1593, notes, Histria is divided into Forum Juli and Histria properly so-called. Here grows the wine Prusinum, now called Prosecco, much celebrated by Pliny.
Oh! Pliny the Elder.
Yep.
Once again, who was Pliny the Elder? He just shows up all over the place. So, was he a monk?
I should have anticipated this. It sure sounds like a monk, right?
But
he was like a naturalist.
Okay.
Like an ancient Rome?
And he seemed to know a lot about like grapes and yeast and grains and fermentation.
And plants in general, I think.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
We are completely going off the cuff about Pliny the Elder.
We should do a whole
Pliny
episode.
We should.
Remember when we said we were going to do an episode about Apicius?
Well, yes. We still have listener Ken Albala like on the line. He's still waiting
right now.
He's still
on the line. Okay,
great. For us to pick up and talk about Apicius.
All right. All right. Keep holding, caller. We'll be with you at some time.
Okay.
All right. So what is Prosecco and how is it different from champagne, you may ask?
What is Prosecco and how is it different from champagne?
Great. Sounds like I'm holding you hostage.
Okay.
All right. So Prosecco is a DOC sparkling wine. DOC is the Italian equivalent of AOC talked about last time.
So it is a DOC. Okay.
It's a DOC.
Okay.
Which is a Denominazione di Origine Controllata.
Okay.
And there's also a premium version called Prosecco Superiore that's a DOCG wine.
What's the G?
Garantita.
So
That's like for like to recognize like premium wines.
Is it you get your money back?
You get
if you don't like it.
This sucked. I mean, you have to go to Italy and return the bottle.
Okay.
And then you get your bottle deposit back.
Okay.
So we'll talk about the Prosecco Superiore in a minute. We're not going to drink any because I didn't know it existed until after I bought the wine for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So remember méthode champenoise. Like the key thing in méthode champenoise is they put some still wine in bottles and then they put in some yeast and sugar and cap the bottles so that it produces gas, carbon dioxide, in the bottles over a long period of time, like at least 18 months for champagne.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have to like disgorge the yeast from the bottles and it's like a whole thing and it takes a long time and is very expensive.
Yes.
That is not how Prosecco is produced, and that's why Prosecco is generally not nearly as expensive as champagne.
Okay.
So Prosecco is produced using the Charmat method.
Okay.
And so instead of putting the wine and yeast and sugar into bottles, they put it into a big steel tank.
This makes so much more sense.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's a pressurized tank, so it's sealed. It does a secondary fermentation in there over the course of like 1 to 2 months. Yes.
Would this be like a metal tank?
Metal tank.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so it does, so the wine and the yeast and the sugar go into the tank. It's sealed. It does its fermentation in there.
Yeah. And then there's no trick of like how to get the yeast out of this tiny bottle. It's just you filter the wine and yeast from the tank.
And then you just bottle it. And do you have to do the dosage?
You don't have to do the dosage. dosage. It's ready to roll.
Okay. And so why would the méthode champenoise continue as it does? Just pure stubbornness?
Two reasons. Partly just because like it's it allows them to say like we use a premium process, but it really does have a different result. And like one isn't better than the other. It's just like what style of wine you're trying to produce. But of course, the Charmat method is much cheaper.
Okay.
And so specifically, the differences are you get a different quality of bubbles from the two processes. From the Charmat method, you get bigger bubbles.
Okay.
Why this is, I don't really know.
I'm curious to see what the bubbly foam of the Prosecco looks like, because I can picture this, that the bubbles may be bigger and less of like a beautiful, like fine
bubble. Yeah, so I think it's going to be different. And so like, if you think about making bread, like close your eyes and think about Sylvia loaf rising slowly over the course of like 18 hours or something.
I'm thinking
like the longer, generally speaking, like the longer the fermentation of bread, the more complex flavors develop. And the same is true of wine. So when you make champagne, you get a wine that is like further removed from the original grapes and has more like yeast character and more complex flavor development. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you use the Charmat process, you know, it only takes a month or so and you get a much like fruitier wine with less complexity.
Ah, okay. This makes a lot of sense.
I thought this was pretty interesting, right?
Why is it that the Charmat method takes so much less time? I mean, I guess that they're, I have no idea, but I'm sure that there's something like different they're doing in quantity or temperature or something like that.
It's got to be that. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know the answer, but I think you're right. Okay, so this was the part that totally blew my mind. So Prosecco is made from different grapes than Champagne. That makes sense. It's in a whole different region. And it is made from the Glera grape.
Okay.
This grape used to be called Prosecco, and that presented a serious problem for the Prosecco industry. Because you've got like a grape called Chardonnay, right?
And it can be grown
grown anywhere, Australia, California, whatever. And if your grape is called Chardonnay and you grow it in California, no one can stop you from calling your wine Chardonnay because that's what it was made with.
Got it.
But the Italian wine industry was like, oh, Prosecco is starting to get popular. We want to make sure that if people are buying Prosecco, it comes from Italy. And if the grape is called Prosecco, we're fucked.
And so when did they figure this out?
2009.
Wait, that recently?
Yes.
Okay.
So like Prosecco, as it is currently marketed, dates to 2009.
That's so interesting.
And so they changed the name of the grape legally, and then they got a DOC for Prosecco so that if you put Prosecco on your bottle, it has to be grown in that region and made with the Glera grape.
Okay.
Wikipedia, I think, said the name Glera comes from the Slovenian word Glera, which refers to the amber color of the grapes. I couldn't really confirm this, but it makes a good story.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, should we crack some of this open?
I can't believe it's that recent. I mean, when you think about like the méthode champenoise and the whole industry and tradition of making champagne versus the newness of
that they just started selling Prosecco in 2009,
that they started making it into a thing.
Right.
In the big commercial sense.
What's going on here? How do I get this plastic cap off of this bottle?
You twist it. So it's got little arrows on top. You do it. I'm scared of getting hurt. Okay, this is a cheap Prosecco you're opening first.
Yes, this is the number one brand of Prosecco in the world. This is La Marca. Okay. I got a quarter bottle.
What might we say this is akin to in terms of...
In terms of what?
Well, I don't know. I was just trying to, like, because this is, you see this everywhere. I mean, this brand
is huge. Oh, like Yellowtail? That was a thing for a while, right?
I feel like this would be like Yellowtail.
Cheers. Yeah, it's fine.
God, I wish I hadn't brushed my teeth this morning.
I mean, okay, so... Yeah,
I mean, I'm enjoying that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing wrong with it at all. Like, compared to the champagne that we drank a couple weeks ago or last week, it is noticeably sweeter and less complex.
Yeah,
I think the bubbles seem a little different.
Yeah, and there's something about the way it kind of like it doesn't have the same sort of like effervescence on your tongue, and there's something about the flavor that is flatter.
Yeah, absolutely. It's simpler and fruitier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't hate it, though.
No, not at all. All right. So I was going to say, wife of the show, Lori, wanted me to mention years ago, someone like a friend of a friend was talking about like planning their daughter's wedding, and that they had gone for Prosecco instead of champagne and used the phrase surprisingly affordable. And so now every time Lori hears the word Prosecco, she thinks surprisingly affordable. Yeah, so I think this La Marca, I don't know, sells for like, you know, $14 or something for the full size.
For the full
bottle.
Size. Right. Was this like $2.99 or?
Yeah, I think it was like $5 probably.
Okay, great.
I certainly wouldn't turn this
down. That's really enjoyable. Yeah, I mean, if I was, you know, going to go have a impromptu picnic in the park, this would not be a bad choice.
Are you about to do that just like right now in the middle of the show?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm leaving.
I understand.
Okay, tell me about the guarantee on the DOC here.
Okay, so this, I got a little confused. So the DOCG is like supposed to recognize like, you know, especially important premium wine styles or areas in Italy. But it gets like, you know, Chianti Classico is a DOCG, and there's like lots of good wine and lots of mediocre wine under that classification. So I think it's probably a thing that's like highly political.
Okay.
And but there are a couple of two different Prosecco Superiore DOCG areas. They're made from grapes grown in a much smaller hilly area. It has to be harvested by hand. Like I said, I didn't get any. So like that's one variation on Prosecco. It's still made with the Charmat process that's required for Prosecco. A couple other variations there. As of just 2020, there's now Rosé Prosecco, which I saw at the store.
Okay.
Which is made with a little bit of Pinot Noir, just like Rosé Champagne. You can find both sparkling, which is called Spumante, and lightly sparkling, Frizzante Prosecco.
And what is La Marca? Does it even say anything?
It doesn't. I don't think it says, but this is definitely Spumante.
Okay.
Like a Frizzante wine is like a Moscato d'Asti.
Yeah, but I think of that as being truly quite sweet.
In terms of the flavor, but in terms of the fizziness.
Okay, so it would be less fizzy.
Much less fizzy.
Got it. Okay.
Oh, so the most popular style of champagne we talked about is Brut, which is very dry. The most popular Prosecco is extra dry, which is a little sweeter than that. And that's what we've got here.
And that has to do probably with the grapes and the Charmat process.
Yeah. And, you know, I said before that there wasn't a dosage, but I bet actually there is, that they do add a little bit of sugar at the end. Of the secondary fermentation.
I wonder what's going to happen.
These wine episodes are so serious.
They are so serious.
So serious.
I wonder what's going to happen if we get any of this wrong. Do you think we're going to lose the show?
I think they're going to take away our guarantita.
Oh, no.
We're going to lose the show. I think we lost the plot a long time ago.
Okay. So how popular is this stuff? Like, I mean, is it possible to like compare it to champagne in terms of like worldwide sales, or is that kind of impossible?
So it's totally possible. I did not look up how much champagne is produced. So it's not possible to do right this second because I didn't do a good job of research. But I can tell you that Prosecco is the most popular sparkling wine. More Prosecco is produced than Cava and champagne put together.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In 2008, when it was like, you know, it started to get popular worldwide in the mid-2000s. In 2008, 150 million bottles of Prosecco were produced. In 2022, that was 638 million bottles, including 134 million exported to the U.S.
Wow.
But I think England is the biggest importer.
Okay.
And this has been one of the biggest marketing success stories in the world of food and drink in decades, because Americans only started drinking it in the early 2000s. It is now like one of the most popular wines in America and has remained popular year after year. Whereas like, you know, by the time we talked about hard seltzer, its moment was already over and sales are plummeting.
Oh, I wondered what was going on with hard seltzer. Do you have a hard seltzer update to share?
Is its moment over and sales are plummeting? Something like sales were down like 22% in 2022, something like that.
I have only had hard seltzer a couple times, like once during our episode and once like at a school picnic or something.
Sure.
And
all the kids love it.
There's something about it that kind of like gives me like a little bit of a tummy ache. I don't know what it is, or if it's like psychosomatic or what.
I've had it once or twice since our episode, but it's not something I ever like go out in search of.
It tastes weird.
It tastes weird, yeah.
I don't like that.
Should we, like, do you want to dump this and try the other Prosecco?
Yeah, let's
okay.
do.
Okay, so this is a bottle that I got at European Vine Selections, my local wine store.
Okay.
They carry several Proseccos. I don't think any of them were the Superiore. And they recommended this one, which is Prosecco Mille, M-I-L-L-E. And this is a Millesimato, which is a vintage Prosecco.
Wow.
So it's vintage 2021. So.
And how much did you pay for this?
This was less than the La Marca. So this was like $13.
Wow.
So,
okay.
And this is a wine store that specializes in like bargains. Like,
okay.
So we'll see.
Okay. So this one, yeah, is extra dry, which
and
is...
It's packaged like a champagne. For anyone who like got mad because we didn't pop the champagne on the show.
Well, we popped it now.
We popped it now. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, so I don't even know, like, I'm curious whether I'll even be able to tell the difference.
Okay, so already I'm seeing the bubbles are big and there's kind of like not that many of them.
Yeah.
Like there's no threat here of the bubbles like overflowing.
Yeah, and I balk at that because I want my wine to be threatening. This is drier. Than the other one?
I mean, that's nice.
I really like it, yeah. I think...
I mean, I do wish it were a little fizzier.
Mm-hmm.
I wish it were a little fizzier. I feel like there's... I think that's part of the flatness that I'm tasting in it is also, like, just the lack of bubbles.
Right. This is interesting. Yeah, I also want it to be fizzier. I assume that is, like, intentional, that's the style that they produce.
But that is... It's really nice. Like, if somebody brought this over... I mean, and admittedly, I don't feel like I have a great sense of... is champagne... Or sparkling wine has to be pretty bad, pretty cheap for me to be
sure.
Like, oh, this isn't very tasty.
I feel like it's been a long time since I've had like the really like cheap stuff like Korbel.
Oh, I had Korbel actually last week because a friend who was with us at Ames's birth brought a bottle of a tiny little like quarter size bottle of Korbel to the hospital when she came to accompany us through his birth. And we did not open it or drink it when he was born.
Okay.
And it has been sitting in our fridge for the last 4 months.
Okay, but you opened it
and
last
so
week.
So finally last week I was like, hey babe, you want some shitty champagne?
Okay, how was it?
It was fine.
Yeah, that would be my guess. That would be like fine in the same way like a PBR is fine.
It was absolutely fine.
Right?
I mean, was it like the Veuve? No.
You're the Veuve.
No, you're the Veuve.
Thanks.
Oh, you're a real Clicquot.
Yeah.
No, but anyway, it was fine.
No, I think that's kind of where we are is like there. It's hard to find actually bad wine. Like you can find undistinguished wine easily. But
my friend Ben Smith, who I am not.
Is good at finding bad wine.
Ben Smith. So admittedly, this was years ago. This was like 15 years ago when Ben lived in Seattle. He's a wonderful cook. We would often like just go over to his house and at the drop of a hat and he would have some delicious meal prepared.
Sounds like you're really about to dunk on
but
this guy.
Inevitably, I'm going to fucking dunk on Ben. Inevitably, what he was serving for wine was literally Charles Shaw, like literally
okay.
Two-buck Chuck. And it was, I found it undrinkable.
Yeah, I'm so not a wine person that like, I think if I didn't know it was Two-buck Chuck, I'd be like, this is fine.
No, I feel like one of those like big, heavy, really round and fruity, high alcohol reds, like that is just abhorrent to me.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly isn't my favorite kind of wine either.
Would you drink it?
I mean, like if it was like if I was at someone's house and it was served to me, yeah. Like if I had it at home, it would like sit around on the counter for a couple of days.
This
and then
is
I would
fair.
Pour it out.
I mean,
yeah.
I would probably, yeah, I'd probably drink it.
Yeah.
Too.
Would you when you went to Ben's house, would you like take your glass and like smash it against the wall and say like, I've had it with this plonk?
I would. And yet he kept inviting us back. Or maybe it was just that we kept showing up.
Honestly, like if I had a friend who was that entertaining, I would keep inviting them back too. But I don't. I don't have any entertaining friends.
You know what? I just want to say that I don't know if I mentioned this to you, Matthew, but Ben asked me if I would like to do a 30-day journaling challenge with him.
Oh, you did mention this. How's it? Is it done?
Today's day six. I haven't done it yet, but I actually did. I brought my journal with me because I thought you might have to do a little cooking between episodes and I could do my journal.
Yep.
Anyway, so everybody find a friend who, you know, while maybe they serve Charles Shaw, they'll do a journaling challenge with you and they will be the ones who suggest it.
Does he listen to the show?
Not anymore.
Okay, thank God.
Ben also like hasn't read any of my books.
Okay.
And Ben, he will try to conceal the fact, and then when I call him out on it, he's like, you're right.
So yeah. What does he bring to the friendship that offsets all of these things?
Oh, Ben is really good at like taking me down a peg. it's one of his specialties. But no, also Ben and I can talk about like anything. Ben and I can talk like explicitly about our sex lives. We can really talk about like struggles in marriage or relationships. Okay. We can talk about bread. We can we have had so much
fun.
When you
say talk explicitly, you mean use phrases like uncut diamonds, 16 carats of uncut diamonds.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Ben and I have not gone to a nude beach together, which is something you and I have done. Mm-hmm. But Ben and I have done things
still waiting for even one listener to find this interesting.
Ben and I have, let's see, Ben and I went to Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm. We also shared bath water a couple of times.
Jesus, we're disgusting. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Ben and I have had fun times. We've gone out dancing in Memphis.
Okay, I wouldn't do that, probably.
And,
all right, Ben, if you're listening, which you're not because you don't listen to the show, you and I are going to have a friend showdown to see who's a better friend.
Okay, great. I can't wait for this.
I think I'm going to lose.
Hey, you want to do a journaling challenge, Matthew?
No, I'll pass.
Okay. All right. So
do you have to like read the journals to each other?
No, but he does. Like we do sometimes exchange pictures of what we wrote that day.
Yeah.
I didn't do it yesterday, though, because what I wrote down was kind of embarrassing.
Sure.
I mean,
do you want to share it now?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
So Prosecco is also used in cocktails. Good segue, huh?
Oh, really good. So what a Bellini.
Bellini.
Like, have you ever had this?
I have had a Bellini. It's great.
Really?
Yeah.
I tend to struggle with things that are peach flavored.
But
so
it has actual peach.
How do you know?
I don't know.
Is it
kind of
thick like a slushy?
Yeah, it's kind of thick.
THICC.
It's THICC, like a word you would use in one of your explicit conversations.
This is June's favorite new joke. Whenever I say something is thick, June goes THICC or THICK.
Okay. Aperol spritz, Prosecco, Aperol, and soda.
I like it, but I would rather have a Campari and soda.
Okay. Scroppino, okay. Which is a lemon sorbet blended with vodka and optional Prosecco.
You know,
I haven't had that. Sounds good.
In the right company.
Yeah. And just before you came over, I was like, wait a minute. Is Prosecco a thing? Like frozen Prosecco?
Of course it is.
Including I found there's like a pouch that you can like get froze or Prosecco and you put it in the freezer, but not all the way. And then you kind of like squish it so that it's semi frozen.
Mm.
I would try that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Wow. Okay. Well, this was really interesting and I'm glad that we did it.
All right. I'm going to put this in the fridge and then we'll come back with segments.
Great.
I love wine with a screw cap. I mean, now that you told me that was a screw cap.
Oh, the La Marca.
Yeah. You know, I just screwed the cap back on and put it in the fridge.
That's
awesome.
Great. So good. Okay. I'm really interested in this spilled mail today. It is from listener Jen. Listener Jen says, I've just binged watched The Makanai cooking for the Maiko house. Thanks for the recommendation, Matthew. The kitchen is my current favorite TV kitchen. The unselfconsciously cluttered and lived in aesthetic in the houses I've seen in this show and my other favorite show, Old Enough, makes me feel so happy and normal. My question is, what are your favorite kitchens from movies or TV? Do they look anything like your own kitchens? Love from Jen in Nelson, New Zealand.
Okay. This is a great question,
Jen. I
love this
and like, question.
I had two that came to mind.
Okay.
Do you want me to go first with one of mine?
Yeah, you go ahead.
So the first one that came to mind for you is the kitchen on the show Black-ish. Which is kind of the opposite of my home kitchen, like, because, you know, they have like a big suburban house and it's like a, you know, very nice big suburban house kitchen with an island and like, you know, a nice big white countertop. But like I feel like the cupboards and fridge are like a kind of a different color scheme. Mm-hmm. And you see them cooking sometimes, which I always love seeing on a show, like a kitchen that actually gets used. And it just like seems like a nice place to hang out. And like everyone on the show is very nice. And so. It seems like, you know, it'd be cool to hang out with them in their kitchen.
I like that. I have an idea.
Yeah.
So this is kind of, I feel like this is really at the opposite end of the spectrum. So I'm thinking of, so in the TV show Severance, the main character has a sister who plays a pretty big role in the storyline. And the sister is married to a man named Rickon, which is one of my favorite things. I can't remember the sister's name, but Rickon is really all you need to know.
Very good.
Anyway, and they live in this like very, I want to say, admittedly, I haven't watched Severance in several months, but in my memory, this kitchen and this whole house are very like 1950s meets like Japanese aesthetic. Lots of what appears to be teak. It's kind of dark. It's very stylish, but in a like old designy kind of way.
Okay, yeah.
And anyway, there's a particular scene in which the main character, this is maybe in the first or second episode, the main character is over at his sister's house after a dinner party, and the dinner party is like really weird, and now his sister's feeding him a sandwich. And he's sitting at the table, and she is in another part of the kitchen, and there's kind of like this, I don't know, sort of island bookshelf thing that separates the two parts into almost like separate areas. But there's something so cozy about it, like all the original wood. And it's very dark in that scene, but it just feels like, oh my God, what a wonderful environment in which to have somebody make you like a late night sandwich.
Yes.
Yeah. And also very like aesthetically pleasing.
Rickon.
God, he is a brilliant person.
Just
brilliant
like, I mean, doesn't he also appear on that show, Rick and Morty? And my other one that came to mind was the kitchen in Seinfeld.
Yes.
Because that one is the one, so it's sort of the opposite of Black-ish in that like nobody on the show is nice, but this one does remind me of my own kitchen. Uh-huh. Because it feels like a real apartment kitchen.
Yes.
And like the apartment, like Jerry's apartment on Seinfeld is like, it is a little bit too big and too clean to be a real New York City apartment that he could afford, but not outrageously like on Friends. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like, you know, that is the one that I feel like, oh yeah, like that seems like a real kitchen that has like, you know, where do you put the cereal boxes and that sort of thing.
It's interesting because I'm finding as we talk about this that I don't know if it's that the TV shows that I'm watching like don't have a lot of kitchens in them. I mean,
no, I didn't have like a ton of things come to mind for sure.
But one thing that I am thinking of is that I have really fond feelings for a lot of kitchens that I've imagined based on novels.
Oh, okay.
So for some reason, what comes to mind is this novel called The Blackwater Lightship by Colm Tobin, and it takes place in this like coastal town in Ireland. I have no idea if the way that I imagine this kitchen is actually the way it's described in the book, but I have a very clear vision of this kitchen. This grandmother lives there. It's got this like breakfast nook in the corner and like, you know, hand sewn like pads on the breakfast nook bench seating. And it's got kind of just an old school like white enamel stove, but old school in the European sense as opposed to the American sense.
Yeah.
So it's like on the smaller side. It looks out on kind of a meadow and then the ocean, but not in like a fancy way, in like a we're going to grandma's house kind of way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm realizing now that I think about it, that I think about this kitchen far more than I even think about the book.
Okay. Yeah.
It's weird.
When you said book, like kitchens in a book, the only thing that came to mind was, I believe in the book Anne of Green Gables, this spoilers for Anne of Green Gables.
Okay.
I believe Matthew dies in the kitchen.
Hey. Yes, Matthew dies, but I don't think Matthew dies in the kitchen.
No? Okay.
Oh.
Was it like at his desk?
I don't think Matthew has a desk. Matthew works in the field. Hold on. We got to find out where Matthew dies.
I don't think he dies in the field.
You don't think he died?
I don't think so. Okay. Yeah,
where
you're right.
Where does Matthew die? Let's find out. Because, yeah, Matthew Cuthbert dies at the end of the first book,
yes.
Anne of Green Gables. Okay. Where does he die?
In Anne of Green Gables, where does Matthew die? Okay. Anne sees him collapse at the threshold of Green Gables. Okay. So I was wrong.
At the threshold of the house?
I guess so. So I always imagine him like standing in the kitchen. I don't know why.
Well, but I think, I mean, this makes sense because again, it's like one of those things that books do. Like, you probably have a certain idea in your mind of where, like, when you walk in the door at Green Gables, like, maybe it just opens into the kitchen.
Also, like, the house I lived in until I was from, like, age, like, you know, 5 to 11 was green. And I always imagined the house in the book, which I read it, like, at that time, looking like my house.
Did you read the other Anne books?
Most of them. Okay. Yeah.
We are currently on Anne's House of Dreams, which is the third book at our house. And wow, I feel like this
the number one thing that she wanted out of a dream house is like not the one that my sort of dad died in.
Yeah. I feel like the second book, Anne of Avonlea, we should do a whole episode on this.
Because, okay, let's do it.
Because I truly felt like this is a book where nothing happens in a bad way.
Okay.
Like, this is a book where the author was literally, like, scratching around for something.
Great. And you want me to share in your torment. I'm down.
Hold on. And then, like, by the time Anne's House of Dreams starts, all of a sudden Anne and Gilbert are getting married. And I'm like,
Gilbert the dog.
Yes. And I'm like, where is the like fun and hot courtship? Like,
oh, yeah. If there's one thing those books are known for, it's being super horny.
No, it's literally they go straight from like hating each other to having one reconciliatory conversation.
Yeah.
Or conciliatory conversation. And then all of a sudden they're engaged at the beginning of the next book.
But you wanted to like get a load of his uncut diamonds.
I did. Well, I want to see their first kiss. Like, why can't we have a first kiss?
No, that's fair.
I didn't realize
that didn't happen.
No, I don't even know if they've kissed yet. It's so.
Could this have something to do with the fact that it takes place in Canada?
Probably.
Okay.
Okay. Wow, that was a really fun question. Thank you, listener Jen.
Yeah, and I bet I'm going to keep thinking of more.
Yeah. Matthew, what you snacking?
Hey, what you snacking? You gotta tell me what you're snacking. Or I'll release the Kraken. So what you snacking?
What you snacking?
Okay, so I think I just pretty much only talk about mass market chips on this segment because I got a new chip flavor. It's the LeBron James endorsed Ruffles Flamin' Hot Cheddar Sour Cream, which of course I've been referring to as LeBron flavored chips.
Flamin' Hot, so it's like cheddar with sour cream, but made flamin' hot.
Yeah, and they're real tasty.
Do you have any?
I do.
Can I have one? Yeah, with my Prosecco. You know, I'm not really snacking much of anything interesting right now, to be honest. I mean, I am snacking, but it's not very interesting. I don't really like trying new things, whereas you do. So when I go to the store, I always get the same chips.
I mostly do, but like I will try like a stupid new product.
Oh.
I had the privilege recently. I was over at Molly's house and I got to raid Molly's snack cabinet. And as you might imagine, Molly maintains a premium snack cabinet.
It's really abundant, isn't it?
Yeah. There were like, you know, several kinds of chips. There were like kettle barbecue chips were open. There was chocolate. There were turtle chips. There were Cheez-Its.
Mm-hmm. There were like the best of dried fruits.
The best of dried fruits.
There was the California slab apricot from Trader Joe's.
Oh, I didn't even notice that, or I would have gone for some. Mm-hmm. Okay.
What else do we have? We have salt and pepper crinkle kettle chips.
Mm-hmm. These are pretty good, right?
These are pretty good.
So, and look, if you look at the bag, it really looks like it says LeBron James flavored.
It's true. It does. Hold on. One thing that always happens to me with sour cream and cheddar chips, the first couple ones always make me want to gag because they taste too much like sour cream.
Okay. No,
and then I get used to it.
I don't have a problem with the flavor of sour cream, only the texture and temperature.
Oh, I have a problem with the flavor, not the texture and temperature. Oh, I like these. You know, I think June would like these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of hope they stick around.
Hmm. And so, did LeBron invent this flavor? Or did he just endorse it?
I like to imagine that they called him, and it was not easy to, like, get, you know, like a 2-minute phone call with King James. And they said, LeBron, this is like Mr. Ruffles from the Ruffles Company. If you could have any chip flavor, what would it be? And he, like, just thinks for a second and says, cheddar sour cream, but make them flaming hot. And they do it.
This is great. Oh, man. I got to buy
really
these
tasty,
for June.
Right?
June's going to love this. Mm.
All right. I also have a now, but wow, and I'll keep it real quick. I think this is a book everybody knows, but I just read Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle Zevin. Molly has read it also. you know, this is an incredibly popular book. If you haven't read it yet, I bet you're going to enjoy it. And I read it on the bus on the way to and from Molly's house.
You cried.
And cried on the bus and got bus sick from reading on the bus.
But not fully pukey. It's just you showed up at my house and you were like, I need Advil.
Yeah. So, good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Also, hey, shout out to dog walker of the show, Diane.
Yeah.
Who got to meet Matthew when Matthew was over at my house last week.
What a treat that must have all my been chips. For Diane.
Diane was pretty excited. Listener Diane, I love your enthusiasm for our show.
Oh, yeah. Also, it was great to meet you and the other dog that you had in tow.
Yeah, Willie. Mm-hmm. That's one of Gilbert's friends. Okay. Well, our producer is Abby Circatella.
Sign up for Molly's newsletter. It's called I've Got a Feeling, and it's at mollyweisenberg.substack.com.
Matthew makes music. Did you know?
I do make music. Yeah, I'm working on some new stuff. It won't be out that soon, but like I mentioned, that Robin cover I'm working on, that should be out sometime soon, if not already by the time you hear this. And I've got another little project cooking along that I'll keep you posted on.
Fantastic. You can rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
And you can hang out with other Spilled Milk listeners at everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com and really want to hear your opinions on this can I get in on your burger thing.
Yeah, I want to hear too. Thank you for listening to Spilled Milk.
We're nothing but a DOCG thing.
Baby.
I'm Matthew Epster Burton.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.